Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the January 28th, 2026 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Air Pollution Control District of San Luis Obispo County. I call this meeting to order, and I'd like to ask Bruce Gibson to lead us in the flag salute. Thank you. So the first order of business here is the election of the board chair and vice chair for 2026.
Madam Chair, can we conduct the roll call first?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, no worries.
I skipped ahead. All right. We need a new chair, definitely. Okay. Okay, roll call, please.
Director Daris.
Here.
Director Eccles.
Here.
Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Hammond is absent. Director Marks.
Here.
Director Moreno.
Here.
Director Newton is absent. Director Ortiz-Legg is absent. Director Paulding.
Here.
Director Pichon.
Here.
Director Robert is absent. Director Sechrist.
Here.
All right. Now we can go on to the election of board chair. And does the clerk of the board want to present the staff report here, such as it is?
I think normally the APCO assists here.
Yeah, I'm happy to
go
through this. So just to summarize what you have here, the typically the vice chair becomes the chair. So that would be Supervisor Moreno. And then we elect a new vice chair who in 2 years' time would become the chair. And we've typically alternated between a city member and a supervisor. So if the board chooses to continue with this tradition, Supervisor Moreno would become the chair, and then you would choose a city member to be the vice chair. And on the back here, you can see our city members currently on the board and how long they have been on our board. And on the front, you can see our past chairs. So basically, like none of, other than Ms. Marks, none of the city members have been chairs or vice chairs since at least 2015.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'd like to see if there's any public comment on this item. Seeing none, I'm going to see if we have a motion. Can we take both positions at once? All right, Mr. Paulding.
Well, I was talking with Ms. Sechrist about vice chair. Obviously, I support Board Member Moreno. I don't know if there was anybody else that wanted vice chair, but before I made a motion, if somebody wanted to express interest, I would do that as a courtesy.
Madam Chair, I'd like to nominate Director Mark Daris for vice chair, please.
I'll second.
And it doesn't look like Board Member Sechrist is saying she really, really, really wants it that bad. So I'm going to make a motion then that we nominate Board Member Moreno as our chair and Board Member Daris as our vice chair.
All right.
We did have a motion. We had a motion and a second to appoint Vice Chair Daris. Do we need to take a vote on that separately because there is a motion and a second?
Oh. Was that a motion?
I can withdraw that so that we can
add. Or your motion counts, and I'll just second it.
Well, they didn't include the chair.
Didn't include the chair.
Right.
So make a new motion.
Make it a table.
Withdraw your old motion and then.
Yeah. So I'll withdraw my motion.
And I withdraw my second.
Withdraws the second. So I move that we nominate. Supervisor Moreno as chair and. Mark Daris is vice chair.
I'll second.
All right. Are there any comments? I would just like to say that I am very happy that Director Moreno will be the new chair. If everyone agrees with me, I definitely support her and also Mark. But having a health and wellness professional as the chair of this board, which is authorized under the health code, I think is a wonderful move forward. So with that, I'm going to call for the roll call vote, please.
Motion is to appoint Director Moreno as our chair and Director Darris as our vice chair for the calendar year 2026. Motion is made by Director Eccles, seconded by Director Pichon. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks. Director Marks.
Yeah, yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Newton is absent. Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Sechrest.
Yes.
Director Eccles.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, and with that, I'm going to pass the gavel to new president, Heather Moreno, and I'll switch seats with you, I think.
I'm good staying here if
are
you are.
Are you good? Okay, yeah. we can do this.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Jan. So we'll move on to A2, which is appointment of the APCD board representative and alternative to the South Central Coast Basin-wide Air Pollution Control Council, which is a mouthful.
Board member Sechrest.
Sorry, I've had that position for I think 2 or 3 years, and I'm happy to continue it. I'm currently the chair. If somebody is really wanting it, then I'm
all right. And I'll ask our ABCO if you had any words that you wanted to say regarding this. Okay. So we have our first. I think Director Darris, you've been the alternate. Are you good to continue, or is there someone else that?
Yes. I believe I've been the alternate. I haven't been called to do anything. I'm happy to continue unless somebody else wants
to continue. All right. Wonderful. I'll go out to public comment. Any comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, and I'll ask for a motion.
So moved.
And second.
All right. Motion by Director Gibson, second by Director Paulding. Roll call, please.
Motion is to appoint Director Sechrest as the representative and Director Darris as the alternate to the South Central Coast Basin Control Council?
Correct.
Motion is made by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Paulding. Director Darris?
Yes.
Director Eccles?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Director Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Pichon?
Yes.
Director Sechrest?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Moving on to our presentation, Jan, we want to thank you for your year of service as chair for this commission. You've done a wonderful job, really just, you know, kind of keeping things moving and keeping the things that are of interest to the public in the forefront. So thank you for that. And we have this lovely plaque. I thought maybe we could take a group photo together and then have you say a few words.
He's very, very tall. Several feet taller than, most of them.
And I have on heels. What I don't have on heels, I'm all, oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Tallest person in the county, I think.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to say, Jan?
Yes, it's been a rare privilege to serve on this board for, turns out, this is my 14th year, but not all at once. It's been a learning experience, and I feel this board is how we work together to protect the health and well-being of the residents of the county is just totally important. And sometimes it's hard work. And I also want to compliment the staff. I think we have a great staff, very strong, and keep us all in line. So thank you very much for this plaque. I will display it proudly in my home office in case anybody visits me there. thanks again.
Thank you, Jan. All right. We are going to move on to our consent agenda. Consent items tend to be routine and non-controversial and can be approved in one motion. I will first ask my board if there are any questions on consent. Seeing none, we'll open up to public comment. Any members of the public wishing to comment on consent items? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring that back for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Director Paulding, second by Director Gibson. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve the consent agenda items C1 through C9. Motions made by Director Paulding, seconded by Director Gibson. Director Darris?
Yes.
Director Eccles?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Director Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Pashong?
Yes.
Director Sechrest?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. We're on to public comment period. This is for items not on the agenda, but over which the APCD has jurisdiction. Are there any members wishing to speak on items not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public comment period and bring it to the APCO's report.
Thanks, Chair Moreno. So I know a lot of you had a very late night last night, so I'll try to keep these remarks brief and my next couple presentations abbreviated as well. I did want to start off with it on a somber note. So Bob Carr, who was our very first APCO, passed away on January 12th. He was our APCO from the inception of the agency in 1973 until 2001, so 28 years. And then after that, he continued his service to this organization on the hearing board from 2004 through 2022, so another 18 years, so quite dedicated to clean air and to the county of San Luis Obispo. He was on the hearing board. You know, that's kind of when I first, or really the only time I interacted with him. He was there for case 1701 with State Parks. He was part of the board when they adopted the stipulated order of abatement and the next couple amendments. So he had a service last Wednesday, a week ago. We had many current and former staff there. I was not able to be there myself, but we have a few people in the room who were there, and lots of former staff. Mark Elliott, who retired from the agency a few years ago, presided over that service. He was 87 years old, and we miss him. You know, very, very dedicated to clean air in Slo County. So moving on, I will like to introduce Andres Sola. He is our new systems administrator. So he started on December 8th. He came to us from probation from the county, and he's doing a great job so far. He's our system admin administrator, sort of our IT guy, but also much, much more than that, maintaining all of our databases and internal systems. So we're really excited to have Andres aboard. We also have a recruitment right now open for an air quality specialist for our compliance division. So this is not replacing anybody, but rather the budget that you all approved in June had 20 FTE, 20 full-time equivalent employees. With Gary retiring, we went down to 19, and so we're basically backfilling that position. So we'll be back up to 20 full-time employees once we complete that recruitment and fill the position. A couple facility and systems updates. So you guys, in this consent item, there was an item on our roof and solar project. So that was basically authorizing us to begin the procurement process and advertise the bid process. We're working with the county on an RFP, working with Public Works to finalize the design and get that out the door. We may end up breaking that project up into a separate roof contract and a separate solar contract. And you know, if we have to come back to you to do that, we will. But hopefully we can avoid that. We're hoping to award a contract at our May board meeting and have you guys award the contract and make any necessary budget adjustments. We're still thinking it'll be in the neighborhood of about $300,000, $350,000 for both, for the roof and the solar. Of course, we don't have actual bids yet, but that's just based on our own research. That's kind of the ballpark that we think we're going to land in. And so the roof repair is not going to happen until after the rainy season based on these timelines. But the good news is, while the roof does have a leak that we haven't been able to patch, and you know, professionals haven't been able to patch it, it is isolated, and we're able to divert that and prevent it from causing additional damage to the building or disrupting our operation. So I think we'll limp through this rainy season, and then we'll get a new roof, and we'll be good to go for another 20 years. The other update on facility and staffing the facility and our internal systems I wanted to make is on the county's transition to their new enterprise resource planning system. So this is very large computer system that handles things like financials and payroll. So just to back up and give a little bit of context. So as your board knows, we are separate from the county, but we were once part of the county, and it was in 2011 that we made that separation. And we still contract back to the county and are still very integrated with the county for things like IT services, purchasing. The county handles payroll and HR. Our vehicles get serviced by county fleet, et cetera. So we're still very integrated with the county. And the county, as at least our supervisors know, is transitioning from their current ERP, which is SAP, to Workday. And so that's the system that handles all the financials for the county and for us, invoices, payroll, certain benefits, HR, timekeeping, things like that. So the county opened their RFP back in July of 2024, and then last fall selected Workday and is aiming at April of next year to fully transition from SAP, from SAP to Workday. So basically a three-year timeline for the county with about $20 million in one-time transition-related expenses in this fiscal year and the next fiscal year just to make that transition happen. And so, APCD, we've been with the county on the SAP system, and we've been along for the ride for this transition. We participated in, we were part of the scope of work for the RFP, and we participated in the vendor selection and demos and provided feedback. And since the county started the transition, we've been responding to their requests for data and configuration. However, kind of hit a little bump in the road. Back in December, we started hearing mixed messages like, well, maybe we'll see if you guys are gonna come along or not. And then 2 weeks ago, we were told informally that we would not be part of the new system for payroll, benefits, and timekeeping, but we would still be integrated with the county for other modules of the ERP, like the financial side, basically. And I think some of the issues that have been cited to us for why they want to cut us loose on the payroll side is, we have a different IEN, we have different benefits that have different open enrollment periods and whatnot. So, it's not a perfect fit, I admit, but I think from our side, we really want to stay with the county. First of all, the timeline, they would tentatively have said they would like us to be out by January of 2027. So that basically gives us 11 months to complete a timeline that the county is taking 3 years to do themselves. I think it's only going to be more expensive for us to go with a separate vendor. Based on talking to my staff, we might, depending on what the vendor is, we might need to hire a new person. There's only one vendor that we've identified that's fully compatible with ADP, and the cost is prohibitive. So if we wanted to be fully integrated with Workday, but with our own system, that's probably cost prohibitive. So anyways, we're working through the county. We have a meeting set up with the auditor's office and their HR team for next week. And, we're going to be discussing this, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention because if we do have to go our own way, it's going to be a really heavy lift and some, significant, unplanned financial impacts on us. We understand that we hope to stay with the county, and we understand that there's going to be, probably some one-time charges for configuration, and then we might have to adjust what we pay, as an ongoing thing. We're totally open to that. And just because we've worked a certain way with the county in terms of like what we do versus what they do for us, we're open to changing all, things don't have to stay exactly the same as they have been, but we do want to stick with the county, and we're working on that. So a brief legislative update or grants update. The farmer program, which we use to basically funds tractor replacement and irrigation replacement, that has not been funded for the last couple of years with the state's budget crunch. But we did get some good news. The state did come up with some money for a new round of farmer. It's only about a little more than $15,000 for our county, whereas the last time we got money, which was 2 years ago, it was $600,000. But we'll take whatever we can get. I think it's good news that we're going to get a little bit of money from farmers. So we'll bring that to you guys probably in May for a budget adjustment. And then brief update on burn season. So backyard burn season opened on December 8th. So far, we've already issued 700 backyard burn permits. Last year, for the whole burn season, we issued about 1,200. So we're well on our way. As we've updated you in the past, we issue these burn permits with CAL FIRE, or rather for CAL FIRE. So CAL FIRE has their own burn permit requirement. And we said, why don't we just be the one-stop shop? People can come to us. They get the APCD burn permit. They get the CAL FIRE burn permit. It's easier for them. It reduces confusion and makes sure everybody gets all the permits they need. So that's been running smoothly. We are about to send out, or maybe we already did, but every year around this time, we send out what we call the e-blast, where everyone who's previously had a burn permit but hasn't gotten one for this year, we'll email them and just kind of remind them, like, hey, burn season's open. We're taking applications. So that should go out this week if it hasn't already. We've had a few complaints around backyard burning, but generally it's going well. You know, we always get a few complaints here and there. I don't think this year is out of the ordinary. And on the prescribed burning front and training burns, we continue to work with CAL FIRE and land managers to support the state's goals for fuel reduction. There was recently a training burn in Templeton that we worked with Templeton Fire Department or Templeton CSD for the necessary permitting that happened over the weekend. There's been some pile burning. There's more pile burning coming up, but nothing too notable. So I'll just skip over that. Looking at air quality data, I give a brief update. So we've been monitoring. We've had a PM10 monitor temporarily in Carrizo Plains since the Gifford fire, and that's specifically to, you know, with the question about valley fever. You know, is there windblown dust that could be contributing to valley fever cases? So again, so it's been out there since August. We have not really seen windblown dust with this monitor. The levels of PM10 look very similar to what we see in Atascadero. So there might be a seasonality. We intend to keep this monitor out there until we need it somewhere else. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the spring. But so far, we have not been seeing any windblown dust. And then lastly, on the Oceano Dunes, so the last meeting, there were some questions about our air-aware system where people get text messages when air quality starts to degrade. So I've spent a lot of time looking at that system and just trying to improve the algorithm, see if we can be more accurate or more timely. And basically haven't gotten anywhere. Like, the current algorithm is not perfect, but, you know, we haven't been able to find a combination of triggers that improves upon it. So I think I think we're going to leave it as it is. Like, I've spent a lot of time on that, and as I said, you know, haven't been able to make any improvements. So I think we're good where we are. And then with 2025 over, we can look back at the year in full and say, how did we do? And very similar to what we talked about in November, Mesa 2 had the fewest number of exceedances of the state PM10 standard ever recorded there. So that's good news. We had 15 unofficially for the year versus 16 in 2024, 19 the year before that. CDF doesn't look quite as good. We had ended the year with 26 exceedances versus 14 the year before that and 23 the year before that. But every year prior was higher. So I think there's a little bit of, you know, just annual variation from year to year. I'm not too excited that CDF had some more than the previous year. And, you know, again, while it's good to see that Mesa 2 had fewer, I'm not sure that that, you know, is super significant. The overall message is it was windier last year than it was the year before, so we expect to see some more exceedances. But overall, our efforts with the dunes seem to be working, seem to be holding steady. We're not going backwards. And as I said, that is it. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tepper. Any clarifying questions? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. Anyone in the public wishing to ask a question on this? No? All right, close public comment, bring that back. Thank you very much. On to D1, a request to implement AB 471 board stipends. Mr. Tepper.
Great, thank you. We have the PowerPoint here. We've talked about this for the last couple board meetings in my APCO report, so I'll try to keep this brief. But as you may recall, we were paying stipends of $100 per meeting to the city members only up until a year ago, when it was, you know, the legal justification for that was unclear. So we had to stop paying those stipends. When we ended, we were issuing W-2s instead of 1099s and deducting payroll taxes, and there was sort of some grief about, you know, it was kind of arduous to get that set up and get the reimbursements. But then we stopped. And then last year, Assemblymember Hart, with Senator Laird as a co-author, got this bill, AB 471, through the legislature, and it was signed by the government that would explicitly authorize stipends for single county districts such as ourselves. So us, Santa Barbara, Ventura, Placer County, we'd be on clear legal footing again to restart these stipends. So what AB 471 authorizes is up to $200 per meeting, capped at $7,200 per member annually. And it allows for increases of 5% per year or CPI. It requires a board resolution to authorize the stipends, and it basically prevents, it explicitly says we cannot authorize automatic increases in compensation. So if we wanted to increase it with CPI or by 5% per year, we'd need to come back every January to do that. And it also specifies that if stipends are established, a report would be due to the legislature in 3 years, just basically looking at, you know, did it affect board membership or board engagement, stuff like that. The requirements for that report are very skeletal in AB 471. So we talked about this at the November meeting. Board direction was to come back with a proposal for city members only to receive compensation of $200 per meeting. So on this table here, you can see that comes out to a little bit more than $10,000 per year. That, I would say, is the high-end estimate. That assumes we get, you know, we have every single meeting, every single city member is present at every meeting. So really, annual impacts are probably going to be somewhat less than $10,000. Some alternatives, if we went back to $100 per meeting, it would cut that number in half to about $5,300 per year. And if, on the other hand, we were to compensate supervisors in addition to city members, it could be up to about $17,000 per meeting annually, which we think we actually probably cannot do supervisors because you're already compensated. But all of this is already in the budget. If the resolution's approved today, there's no need to take a budget adjustment or anything like that. So with that, the resolution is in your packet. We do anticipate a streamlined onboarding. So we do need to do the W-2s at the end of the year. That seems to be the direction from not only our county auditor, but lots of auditors across the state. It's kind of different commissions and special districts are currently have a mix of, you know, some are doing 1099, some are doing W-2s, but the direction seems to be moving towards W-2s. So that's what we would be doing. But we have a streamlined onboarding process, basically just require these forms here, I-9, W-4, direct deposit. Staff can help with, you know, getting people through the paperwork if need be. And then members would submit requests for reimbursement and receive the stipend. So that's it. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tupper. First, I'm going to go out to the public. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. This is something we talked a bit about last time, and I think we all generally agreed for the city members that $200 was, you know, reasonable to compensate them for, you know, travel and time and things like that. So it sounds like, you know, the way you're putting it together is reasonable. If we have any questions or concerns, otherwise a motion.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Director Gibson, a second by Director Marks. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve the resolution adopting AB 471 board stipends. Motion is made by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Marks. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Eccles.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Sechrest.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. On to D2, hearing to adopt proposed changes to district fees. Mr. Tupper.
All right, thank you. So this is another very streamlined presentation. We've already been through this once. Our rule development process, we've had a couple stakeholder workshops in May and then again in October. We didn't get any comments at those meetings. At the last board meeting, we had our preliminary hearing. We're required by the Health and Safety Code to hold two hearings whenever we adjust our fees. So that was the first. We did not get any adverse comments. There was no direction from the board to change anything. So here we are today at the hearing for final adoption. And what we have proposed is identical to what we brought to you back in November. Really briefly, what are these changes? Basically, we are going to have two more fiscal years of 6% increases to permit fees. And then if the CPI is greater than 6%, then fees would increase by the change in CPI instead. And then starting in fiscal year 2028-2029, fees would be increased annually based on the CPI. So this is basically just, you know, as currently amended, our rule increased fees by 6% per year, and this just gives it two more years of those 6% increases. So if there are a few other very minor changes, we're going to round down certain fee categories just to make our life easier with the accounting. We're changing how we calculate fees for coating for auto body shops, printers, and surface coaters, basically from a per gallon to per pound. That's basically just going to make the math easier. It doesn't change anyone's actual fees or fee category. And then we're going to fix some typos and some other minor changes. What's not changing are burning related fees. Our current permit fees for this fiscal year will remain the same. And then we have a number of fees that are already indexed to CPI and they will remain indexed to CPI. And then there are no new fees in this proposal. So the impact on permitted facilities. So again, as currently amended, the rule is set to index by CPI next year. So if we assume a 3% increase, what's the difference between that and the 6% increase that this rule would affect? So basically that change amounts to less than $50 for the majority of our facilities. So over 600 facilities with this fee increase, or, you know, if this update is made, their fees would increase by less than $50 versus if nothing happened. And then you can see there are some facilities that would have, you know, up to $100 or a little bit more. There's only 15 facilities who would be affected by more than $500 per year. And as you can see, it's our largest facilities. Sentinel Peaks Resources, which is the oil field out on Price Canyon Road, be about $5,000. PG&E, Diablo Canyon, $3,000. And you can see the rest here, Phillips 66, Cal Poly, Union Oil, Firestone Walker. On the impact on our operations, so next fiscal year, with no change and a 3% CPI, our permit revenue would increase by $60,000. With the proposed changes, it'll go up by about $100,000. So that's a net increase of $60,000. And then for the next fiscal year, it's a net increase of $130,000. And that brings our cost recovery, we estimate by the end of, or for fiscal year 2027-28, it would be 66%. So in summary, These fee change follows the board-approved fiscal plan and seeks a smooth permit fee increase over time. Total fee revenue would increase by about $60,000 in next fiscal year and $130,000 the year after that. Permit program cost recovery would be estimated to increase from 63% in the current fiscal year to 66% in the fiscal year 2 years from now. We had two public workshops. We didn't receive any adverse comments, and this is the second board meeting or the second board hearing on this. Your board didn't request any changes last time, and so no changes have been made to the proposed update. And that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Tepper. Yeah, I think it's important to note that our current cost recovery rate is 60%. The goal is 95%. So while nobody likes an increase in fees, this is simply trying to recover costs so we don't keep subsidizing the work that needs to be done. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll go out to the public. Any members of the public? Seeing no public comment, I'll bring that back for a motion.
Second.
A motion by Director Gibson, a second by Director Sechrest. Roll call, please.
Motion is to adopt the proposed changes to District Rule 302 Schedule of Fees. Motion is made by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Sechrest. Director Daris.
Yes.
Director Eccles.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Sechrest.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. On to item D3, a request to implement fiscal year 25-26 Slow Clean Air Incentive Program, and this is Megan Field.
All right, good morning, everyone. My name is Megan Field. I am an air quality specialist and our public information officer at the Air District. And so today I'm going to be presenting on our request to implement our fiscal year 25-26 Slow Clean Air Incentive Program. This year's allocation split is fairly straightforward. As Carl had mentioned, they hadn't funded Farmer in the past 2 years. Even though we're going to be getting a little bit, we still have a significant shortfall for funding agricultural projects. So you'll see a big portion of what we're doing going towards ag this year again. This slide provides a summary of our recommended project category allocations for our current fiscal year 25-26. We're getting just over $1 million in Carl Moyer and local DMV funding for our program. And as listed, we'll have about $84,000 to administer our grant programs. Based on the demand and what staff what we get as feedback, we've determined that off-road equipment replacement, so ag tractors, off-road construction, and marine vessel engine repowers, as well as EV infrastructure, will be what we focus on for this funding this year. Beyond these allocations, you're also approving an RFP, authorizing our APCO to enter into any necessary agreements and reallocate funds to different categories if we notice that in the first 6 months we're not moving funding. A question that's come up in the past at these board meetings is when we look at emission reductions versus dollars spent, are these categories that we've proposed shown to be some of our most cost effective? And that answer is yes. These programs that we've picked here, not only in terms of staff time spent to implement these programs, but also when we look at the emission reductions that we've secured versus the dollars that we've spent, these programs are very cost effective for us to run. So this slide provides a summary of our recommended project category allocations for the previous fiscal year. You'll see in this board item that we had some interest from previous Carl Moyer funding accounts that accrued, and we're rolling that over into our current our 24-25 program. And that program was already allocated by your board back in January of 25 for off-road equipment replacement, so that's what this just under $13,000 will be going towards. So relative to our last year's Clean Air Incentive Program, there's a couple of minor changes that you'll see. We are adding marine vessel repowers back into the mix. We've provided funding for marine vessels several years, but we've been struggling to get the money out the door. But we're trying to expand our outreach to those that might be impacted by the commercial harbor craft regulation. and trying to get them to understand what their compliance deadlines are and get them to apply for some funding. Marine vessel repowers will be capped at $100,000 per engine. Relative to the other programs that we do, they're capped at $100,000 per piece of equipment. Those marine vessel engines are extremely expensive projects. All projects must continue to meet the Carl Moyer guidelines cost effectiveness values. And for the first 6 months of our program, we will be prioritizing small businesses. What that means is businesses fewer than 20 employees and businesses that have their total gross annual receipts under $5 million. Last year we did that for this program and it was very successful. We were able to partner with a lot of businesses that we had never worked with before, had never gotten grants from us before, so we're convinced that that was the reason why. So here is our equipment replacement and marine vessel repower category. We'll have about just under $480,000 from our Carl Moyer Year 28 fund, about $325,000 from DMV and DMV interest. So it brings us just over $800,000 for this program category. As Carl mentioned in his APCO report, it's possible we're likely going to get a little bit of farmer funding this year, not going to exceed, I'm hoping we get a little more than 15, but it's not going to exceed 25,000, and we'll bring that to the board in May. And finally, we have 200,000 from our DMV funds. This will be going towards electric vehicle infrastructure. These are some photos of previous projects that we've done in the past year. The one on the side there is includes solar, so we did EV charging and solar coupled with it. We really try to focus on the multifamily housing applications. So to touch a little bit on our outreach efforts this year, we've been meeting with equipment vendors and dealers to ensure that they're aware of our programs, understand our applications. They're really the ones that help these applicants fill out the applications a lot of times. And so we want to make sure that they fully understand the programs and what funding we have. We're also participating on February 3rd at Conservation on the Field Day, put on by the UC Cooperative and Small Farms Network. This will be up in Creston, and so there's going to be panels and technology panels, and it's actually at the property of one of the grant recipients that we've worked with just this past year. So we'll be doing kind of an equipment demo with them and answer questions about our program. On the marine side, we have flyers that have been going out, and we have staff that's going to be presenting at the February Harbor Advisory Board meeting in Morro Bay. That'll also be the first week of February, and we've been working with the ports and the Fishermen's Association to try to get the word out. And like always, we're always going to have postings on social media and our website and be fielding calls from the public. All right, so pending board approval, we hope our programs will open on February 17th. And these are the staff members that are responsible for the different program categories if you have any specific questions. But otherwise, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Field. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Yes, thank you. My question is, I hail from Morro Bay, of course, and actually I'm a licensed captain as well. So my question is with regard to the $100,000 cap for the marine vessel engine repowers. How is that determined? How is that number determined?
We're trying to keep the funding equitable across the different program categories. So while the tractors are getting $100,000 per piece of equipment, those tractors still can range up to $200,000 to $300,000, depending on what kind of tractor it is. And so just based on what we've done, these marine vessels usually have two engines in them, so they'll get potentially up to $200,000 for their one project. So just trying to keep that number similar for the different project categories.
Okay. my concern with that number, and I'll see where we wind up, but I'm going to advocate that number be higher just to provide for more flexibility, because it's not necessarily just the engine. These are different types of engines. They happen to be larger, and they run much hotter. And so oftentimes there's substantial alterations that need to be made to the vessel to accommodate the engine, and sometimes it just doesn't work at all because of the size of the engine. So my concern is that with the limit of 100,000, it may result in no participation in the program, and we may want to explore some flexibility there that if we raise that, then we may get a vessel operator to participate, because I know the participation has been minimal in the past because of the difficulty of retrofitting. So thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I had a question about the DMV funding. So I have an electric car, and the DMV fees have gone way up for electric because we're not contributing to the gas tax. And it's my understanding that the DMV funding is actually from the gas tax. Is that correct?
The DMV funding that we get is actually part of your car registration, and that number has not gone up. It's only, I think it's $2 to $4 that has not gone up, and it's listed on your registration when you see it. It says air quality fee or tax.
Uh-huh.
So it's not from, I don't believe it's from the gas tax. It's specifically from car registration fees.
Okay, so the electric autos are contributing to the DMV funding.
Correct, yep.
Good, I'm happy to hear that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Seeing none, let me go ahead and open to public. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment. With regards to Director Echols' question, I would love to hear your response on that. And I'm,
sure.
I think the biggest concern is, like, you want to have enough people be able to take advantage of it. You don't want one project to come along and take the whole thing. But to the director's point, could that limit, zero of them being done because it's just not enough to help compensate?
We do have very limited funding, about $800,000 for all of our program categories. Something that we're going to be working with the fishing vessels is trying to get in compliance with the state regulations. We found that a lot of these marine vessels are actually not in compliance. And so if they're not in compliance, we actually cannot help them and can't fund a project. So while we're bringing money to you today for marine vessels, we have a feeling that we're going to be working with them on compliance for the next several months. And really our hopes is next year we'll have everybody in compliance and all their ducks in a row to be able to fund these projects. So if somebody is ready to go now, I don't necessarily think that $100,000 per engine is going to stop them from moving forward. We have had several marine vessels that have moved forward, and that's mostly covered what they've needed with small out-of-pocket expenses on their own. But we definitely can look at that for future years once people are in compliance with those state regulations.
All right. Madam Chair, and didn't we hear in your presentation that there's a mid-year consideration of adjusting aspects of the program as well?
Yes, if after 6 months we see that no money is moving for different categories, we'll rotate them to other car and lawyer funding. We haven't really had to do that before. We typically try to see it out and make sure that people are getting funding, but with some of these ag tractors, the funding is going to go probably pretty quickly. So our goal is to really try and work with those the fishermen this year, get everything ready so that they're ready for next year too.
Thank you. Other questions, comments, a motion?
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Sorry, I didn't get in there fast enough. I was going to make a suggestion that the cap be lifted to $150,000 for the marine vessel engine repower. I think, and my understanding is there's discretion in, mm-hmm. in how the awards are given out. Said quite eloquently, the case may be that it would force that number to zero if we keep that limit at $100,000, just because it wouldn't be feasible. So I think honestly, what would happen here is we may get a taker at 150.
I think one thing to also keep in mind too is that we do also have a cap at 65% as well. So it would be 100 or 150,000 or 65% of their eligible cost. So if you have somebody that comes to you and says, oh, I only got 130, that would be why, because they still have to have, there's a cost share requirement as well.
Gotcha. So my intent is just to give you actually the district more flexibility in terms of entertaining an applicant. And one question too on that is it just the engine only, or can retrofit costs be included? In other words, if a person had to alter a vessel substantially, which does happen quite often. Would those costs be covered, or is it just the engine itself?
I'm going to have Andy answer that question.
Yes, Andy Mutziger with APCD Grants team. And yes, they can basically, if they're going to have to do a new transmission, any requirements that are necessary to get that engine repowered done, those are eligible.
Great, thank you. So, Madam Chair, yeah, I would just urge that we consider 150 the cap there, so that it gives the district more flexibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the motion maker, I think that you make good points, Director Eccles, but because we have the opportunity to do a look back during the mid-year review, I think that would be the appropriate time to see how the program's working. And generally, I think, you know, it's important to defer to staff's, kind of recommendations, and I'd like to head that direction. Thank you.
I agree, but to Director Eccles' point, like, if you could let us know, are there folks who would be interested in that, but they're stopped because it is such a huge price tag?
Sure, yeah.
So that we could make that change.
Yeah, we can be tracking that, especially as we're doing our outreach here in the next couple of weeks before we launch the program as well.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had another question. Are you also reaching out to Port St. Louis
yes.
folks as well as Morro Bay? Yeah,
yes.
So there's a potentially a pretty large pool of these marine engines that are causing problems, compliance problems, and all that. So I have to agree. I think we need to look at the whole question when we have the update in 6 months in the whole budget context. So, but it's great work. It's really important to work with the fisher folk out there. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing that up, Director. We've got a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve the district's request to implement fiscal year 25-26 Slo County Clean Air Incentive Program as presented. Motion is made by Director Paulding, seconded by Director Gibson. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Eccles.
No.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Gibson. Yes. Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Pashong.
Yes.
Director Robert.
No.
Director Seacrest.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-2.
Thank you. Do we have any board member items? All right, seeing none. Meeting adjourned. We will be back May 20th. And have a good winter and spring.